Hello there. Today is Thursday, May 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, 11 states sue the U.S. government over new transgender bathroom rules. Some bad news for Hillary Clinton's campaign. Anti-Trump protesters are ramping up their efforts outside of his rallies. Also ahead, online talk about where the Obamas will live after they leave the White House. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, President Obama is now in Japan, the second leg of his Asia trip, where he's attending the G7 summit. In a joint news conference with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, he told the U.S. president of his country's profound resentment over a former U.S. Marine's involvement in the killing of a Japanese woman outside an American military base. The two did talk about it ahead of the G7.
We did discuss the tragedy that took place in Okinawa, and I extended my sincerest condolences and deepest regrets. And the United States will continue to cooperate fully with the investigation to ensure that justice is done under the Japanese legal system.
Japanese authorities arrested Kenneth Franklin Shinzato, a 32-year-old former U.S. Marine, who they said confessed to stabbing and strangling the 20-year-old Japanese woman. International Edition's Susan Yackey talked about it with VOA Southeast Asia Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
The U.S. has a very heavy presence on Okinawa. 15 of the 23 U.S. bases in Japan are located on the main island of Okinawa, and the bases encompass about 10% of the total land of the southern prefecture. And there are thousands and thousands of U.S. military personnel, their dependents, and civilian employees there. And any time a crime is committed by one of them, it is headline news all throughout Japan. And, of course, when it's such a serious crime as a homicide, you can imagine it is quite emotional. And this all really harkens back very bitter memories to around 1995, when some Japanese schoolgirls were raped by U.S. military personnel on Okinawa, and that triggered huge demonstrations there against the American bases.
And then more recently, we had this case of the 20-year-old Japanese woman.
She disappeared late last month. Her body was found last week, and a former Marine who is a civilian employee of the U.S. military on Okinawa has been arrested in connection with her death. And this has been practically front page news every day since his arrest. And of course, that's what prompted Prime Minister Shinzo Abe to want to speak specifically about this to President Obama before the G7 summit got underway.
And bringing up the G7 summit, what are we expecting there?
Well, you get a lot of leaders together for a very short period of time who are supposed to tussle with the world's biggest problems. So we will get some sort of communique touching many issues involving the global economy, the refugee issue, geopolitical matters. Very little has leaked out so far, but we're told from Japanese sources that there will be a relatively blunt statement about the South China Sea and freedom of navigation and all that, but it's not apparently going to mention China by name, but everyone will know it's referring to China.
And then later this week, we have the symbolic visit to Hiroshima by President Obama.
Yes, President Obama will become the first U.S. leader to visit the site of the first atomic bombing, the bomb dropped by the United States military in August 1945, followed by another bombing a couple of days later on Nagasaki as well. So very poignant. The president is not going to apologize for the American action. He will meet with some of the survivors. This is being very much appreciated by the people of Japan and Prime Minister Abe.
And you can read more on the story at voanews.com. Now let's take a look at what's trending online with our social media reporter, Michael Lippin. Michael, I hear there's lots of chatter about what the Obamas plan to do after they leave the White House. What's the buzz?
Well, hi, Lori. One of the biggest trending items on Facebook today is about the Washington, D.C. neighborhood where the president and first lady reportedly plan to live after Obama leaves the White House in January. Obama, who is from Chicago, already has said that he intends to stick around D.C. for a couple of years to allow his youngest daughter, Sasha, to finish her high school in the city. But in the past 2 days, several local news outlets have been quoting sources as naming the neighborhood and even the house that the Obamas have chosen as their next address. Now, that is a neighborhood in the northwest quadrant of D.C. named Kalorama. It's not too far away from where I live, actually, in DuPont Circle. It's an upscale area with pretty highly priced homes. And the one that the Obamas apparently have decided to rent is a 9-bedroom mansion of 8,200 square feet that news site Politico says was last sold in 2014 for $5 million.
Wow. So how are people who live in that area reacting to the news?
Well, I should say that the White House hasn't yet confirmed this information, but some people who live in the area are getting pretty excited. Here is Facebook user Seth Long. It's crazy that the Obamas plan on moving to the Kalorama neighborhood. It's just a 10-minute bike ride from my apartment. This raises so many questions, like, will they be dancing at the Bosa Bar, which is a short walk away in the Adams Morgan nightlife area? Long also asks, will the Obamas be at the nearby Malcolm X Park on Sundays? Maybe I'll see them at the DuPont Circle Farmers Market, where I can invite them to go mushroom foraging. Now, other Facebook users were saying, there goes the neighborhood, as in, you know, life in Kalorama will become perhaps a little tougher with such a high-profile new resident. But I also saw a lot of people expressing surprise that some news sites are publishing the address and even the floor plan of this mansion, saying, how could this be good for the Obamas' privacy and their security? Well, we'll have to see whether the Obamas really end up there, Lori.
All right. Thanks so much, Michael. You can follow him at Michael_Lippin. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the other stories we're following on voanews.com. A Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty journalist has been released from an Azerbaijani prison. Islamic State extremists are using civilians as human shields in Fallujah. South Sudan women demand a role in the transitional government. Billionaire Donald Trump starts asking donors for campaign cash. And 11 states are suing the U.S. over transgender bathroom guidelines in schools. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues, and this has not been an ordinary presidential election season here in the United States by any means. In one of the campaign year's more grisly spectacles now, angry protesters gathered outside of a Donald Trump rally in New Mexico.
I want to protest against Trump. I think he represents hate.
We're trying to say that we won't tolerate Donald Trump being here and spreading his toxic beliefs everywhere.
Well, the rally did get violent as some protesters threw burning T-shirts, plastic bottles, and other items at police officers, injuring several and toppling trash cans and barricades. Meanwhile, a government watchdog report on Wednesday faulted Hillary Clinton for her use of private email for official business when she was Secretary of State. Here to talk about all of these political developments, VOA national correspondent Jim Ballone. Jim, first, what exactly did this report find regarding Clinton's emails, and how damaging could it be for her campaign?
Well, it found that Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, disregarded the rules by which you handle government information, the way you communicate with fellow employees, and the way you preserve your emails under the Government Records Act. All of these things were at variance with how the government would like it done. I mean, the report mentioned that
They talked to several other secretaries of state, and there was some precedent prior to Clinton taking office of some of the secretaries using private email. But in the case of Hillary Clinton, I think she was singled out. And one reason was that she used a private email server and that email account as her main means of communication. And I think the department just felt after this investigation that went on for quite a while that this just completely disregarded the rule. In terms of politics, I think the thing to watch for now is this is completely separate from an FBI investigation into whether she jeopardized sensitive material while Secretary of State, and we're still awaiting the outcome of that investigation.
What is her campaign saying about it?
Well, they are noting that she was not the first one to do it. They're saying that had she known what she knows now, she wouldn't do it the way she did it, and that, you know, the worst is now out on this, and that they are ready to cooperate. Look, I think Democrats are nervous about this. This won't help their nervousness, but mostly they want her to be cleared by the FBI, that is, not indicted in any criminal way. I think if they can get past that hurdle in the minds of many Democrats, you know, she'll be okay. But this issue will dog her right up to the election, and we already know that Donald Trump, even in the same day, was out there calling her out because of it.
Right. He has been seizing on the opportunity. He's also in a fight with another woman, Senator Elizabeth Warren, who has been vigorously criticizing him. But he's also taken it a step further, calling her a name that many say is pejorative and only aggravates the narrative about his views on women and minorities.
Yeah, he's referring to her apparent heritage as a Native American, as an American Indian, which she has said previously when she was running in Massachusetts for the Senate, which has been called into question by some as to how accurate that is. But the point is that, you know, she has been among the most vocal and pointed of Trump's Democratic critics. She doesn't hold anything back. They've engaged in a kind of war over Twitter for a while now. And she's calling him a small man with who's, you know, only interested in making money, reference to some of the comments he made during the housing crisis several years ago. And, of course, he's firing back, referring to her as Pocahontas. And, of course, a lot of Native Americans are taking offense at the way he's doing that. But we know that Trump is no stranger to insulting or being willing to say things that offend a number of groups in the country.
But it seems to also be part of some of the inspiration we're hearing. There have been some disruptive protests inside and outside of Donald Trump rallies.
The incidents we've seen of late, particularly in Albuquerque on Tuesday, there was a Trump rally there. Outside, anti-Trump demonstrators gathered. They threw things at police. They broke through a barricade. Unfortunately, I think this may be a preview of what we're going to see through the general election campaign, because it's been a habit now where Trump has gone, he's drawn these demonstrators. Of course, he called them out, saying many of them were waving Mexican flags and so forth. New Mexico has the highest per capita Hispanic population in the United States. It has a Hispanic American governor who also happens to be a Republican, and he called out Susana Martinez. A little bit ironic, because Martinez has actually showed up among some experts on Trump's possible vice presidential list. Martinez responded she wasn't going to be bullied into supporting Trump, and so that particular pairing doesn't seem likely, at least at this point.
All right, that's VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. 11 U.S. states are now suing the Obama administration over federal guidelines which recommend that public schools let students use the bathrooms of the gender with which they identify instead of what is on their birth certificate. The lawsuit, led by Texas, accuses the Obama administration of conspiring to turn schools into laboratories for a massive social experiment. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton.
We're taking this action to protect Herald Independent School District, which on Monday night fulfilled a responsibility to their community by adopting a bathroom policy that puts the safety of their students first. Unfortunately, the policy placed them at odds with those federal directives which were handed down earlier this month. That means the district is in the crosshairs of the Obama administration, which has maintained it will punish anyone who doesn't comply with their orders.
Well, critics of the administration's policy argue that it marks a significant change to settled law that should be left up to Congress, not the White House. The Justice Department has rejected that argument, saying that federal civil rights laws, which bar discrimination on the basis of sex, provide the legal foundation for the department's guidance. Jay Brown, director of communications at the Human Rights Council, told VOA this week that there hasn't been a single increase in incidences of bad behavior in bathrooms where non-discrimination laws have been passed.
We've really seen our opponents come at us and use fear-mongering, frankly, to paint transgender people as monsters.
Neither the White House nor the Justice Department has commented on the lawsuit. You can read more about the story on our website at voanews.com. This is International Edition on VOA.
VOA News.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. DJ Trance music group Above and Beyond and their current world tour. That's coming up. Lots more about it. But first, as the Memorial Day weekend approaches in the United States, a holiday to remember those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice for their country. We've got a holiday tradition here in Washington, the National Memorial Day Concert, which draws hundreds of thousands to the nation's capital. I talked about it with the executive producer of the 27th annual event, Michael Colbert, who said it's just an honor to be a part of this.
I mean, to be able to come to the capital of the United States and to remember all of those who are serving, who have served, you know, their families who sacrificed so much, you know, our wounded warriors, but also to try to get back to the real meaning of Memorial Day, to thank all those who've made, you know, the ultimate sacrifice for our country.
Tell us about the concert itself. I know you've got some big names planning to perform.
We sure do, Lori, and I'm thrilled that Joe Mantegna and Gary Sinise are both going to be back as our hosts. Joe, as we know, is the star of Criminal Minds, and Joe also had five uncles serve in World War II. We're thrilled also to welcome Trent Harmon, if you will, the last American Idol. He just won recently. He's coming to sing the national anthem. Trace Adkins, the great country star who's done so many wonderful things for veterans, is singing a beautiful song he's written about Arlington Cemetery. There won't be a dry eye in the place for that. You know, the world-renowned opera star Renee Fleming is coming. Esapetha Murkerson, who's been on so many shows, you know, Law and Order that we know her from, and Chicago Med Today. Isai Morales, you know, who's from movies and television. Catherine McPhee, you know, who's got such a hot show, mm-hmm. Scorpion, right now. And As always, we're really honored that General Colin Powell will be back joining us again, our wonderful American statesman. But we've got something special this year. The Beach Boys are going to come and join us because we're marking 50 years since Vietnam. And we all know what huge stars they were from that era. And Mike Love wears a bracelet that it was given to him by a Vietnam veteran who said he would have never made it through the Vietnam War if it wasn't for that great Beach Boys music. So we're feeling really great about the show. And again, just so humbled to be able to do this for so many others who've done so much and do so much for our country.
Now, is there a theme?
Yeah, actually, we're having, you know, three main focuses that we're doing this year. One of which is we're focusing on all of those family members who've lost someone who were serving in either Iraq or Afghanistan. And we're specifically telling a story about a mother who lost her only child in Afghanistan. And she comes down every week and sometimes multiple times a week to visit his grave at Arlington Cemetery in Section 60, where so many of our service members are buried. And coming out of that, you know, Trace is going to do this amazing song about Arlington Cemetery. But we're also going to tell a story about a guy named Jack Farley. And Jack lost his leg in Vietnam above the knee, and after long recuperation at Walter Reed. He has spent his life helping other Vietnam veterans, disabled veterans, and has done amazing work since the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan with the wounded warriors, you know, at Walter Reed. Gary Sinise is going to tell Jack's story.
Excellent. Now, this is live at the U.S. Capitol. I'm sure there will be a lot of people there in attendance. And also, if people can't get there, they can watch it on television.
That's exactly right. Yeah, there'll be, you know, hundreds of thousands there on the West Lawn of the Capitol this Sunday night at 8 o'clock, May 29th. You know, this event has become the nation's memorial service, as it is as much about our memorial concert. And we're also very proud to be able to share it around the world to all of our service members via the American Forces Network.
Well, they are known for their pulse-pounding trance tracks, but now the British-based trio Above and Beyond is touring with a total acoustic setup. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, the three DJs have traded turntables and headphones for harps, pianos, and guitars.
Most of the time when you attend an Above and Beyond show, you get something like this. That's what the trio, John O'Grant, Tony McGinnis, and Paavo Siljamaki, brought to more than 1 million people on a beach in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. But it's their acoustic recordings that have gotten them into some of the most prestigious venues in the world. They released an unplugged album featuring some of their hits 2 years ago to good success. However, Paavo Siljamaki says the group wanted to do more.
It left us with a real sort of itch to do it again. It felt like we hadn't done enough, or it was nicer than we had initially predicted to play together, and then to have an audience like we had at the Greek really made sense of it all. So that was really why we decided to do acoustic, to have a chance to do it again.
During their current tour, the band has sold out the Greek Theater in Berkeley, California, the Sydney, Australia Opera House, and the Hollywood Bowl. Electronic DJs usually cannot play such venues because of volume restrictions. But Tony McGinnis says the acoustic concerts have opened a door the group never thought it would go through.
We sort of Trojan horse our way into some of these incredibly prestigious venues. I mean, we walked on stage at the Greek Theater having only done 4 gigs, really. And what band gets to do the Greek Theatre after doing 4 gigs? I can't think of any, you know. We kind of leapfrogged all that kind of years of trailing around the small clubs by bringing our electronic audience to these acoustic venues.
We were in heaven, you and I. And when I lay with you and close my eyes, our fingers touch the sky.
During its current tour, Above and Beyond is traveling with a 15-piece ensemble. Tony McGinnis sings and plays guitar, mandolin, and ukulele. Paavo Siliamaki plays the piano, vibraphone, and cello. Jono Grant plays the Rhodes piano, guitar, and vibes. When they play the Hollywood Bowl, Above and Beyond will perform with a full 32-piece orchestra. Paavo Siliamaki says the idea of performing at the storied venue still seems unreal.
And I know the electronic and the acoustic are connected, but the fact that, you know, it took us 15 years of touring to be able to, you know, do a show at the Madison Square Garden, and here we are with acoustic, that's actually a really new thing for us. And we can bring it to Hollywood Bowl, which is actually even a bigger venue, so it feels feels a little unreal, this whole thing. It'll feel real once we're actually on stage doing it, but until then, I don't know.
Above and Beyond's new album, Acoustic 2, goes on sale June 3rd. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Well, that is going to do it for this edition of International Edition. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. You can always find us online at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El-Tayeb. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A revolutionary court in Tehran has reportedly issued an additional 10-year prison sentence for prominent Iranian journalist and human rights activist Narges Mohammadi because of so-called crimes against national security. Ms. Mohammadi, a former spokesperson for Nobel Peace Laureate Shirin Ebadi's now banned Center for Human Rights Defenders, has been an advocate for women's rights, religious and ethnic minorities, political prisoners, and is a committed opponent of the death penalty. Ms. Mohammadi has been repeatedly incarcerated because of her human rights work and is currently serving a 6-year term in Evin prison. She is reported to be in dangerously poor health. Human rights monitors have expressed outrage over the recent reported action against Ms. Mohammadi. Spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani of the Geneva-based Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights called the sentence appalling, saying it is illustrative of an increasingly low tolerance for human rights advocacy in Iran. Amnesty International said it was another chilling example of Iran's use of vague national security charges to crack down on peaceful freedom of expression. UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in Iran, Ahmed Shahid, said there is absolutely no reason why Narges Mohammadi should spend one more hour in prison, let alone 16 years. He called for her immediate and unconditional release and access to medical treatment. State Department Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, tweeted that no one should be sent to prison for 16 years for peaceful civic activism. Iran should release Narges Mohammadi immediately. And U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Samantha Power, called the news terrible, adding that Ms. Mohammadi is unjustly jailed and should be free. President Barack Obama has said that strong and vibrant civil societies are an essential component of strong and successful countries.
Human progress has been propelled not just by famous leaders, not just by states, but by ordinary men and women who believe that change is possible, by citizens who are willing to stand up against incredible odds and great danger. not only to protect their own rights, but to extend rights to others.
Narges Mohammadi is one such citizen. The United States joins the international community in calling on the Iranian government to release her and all members of Iran's civil society who have been unjustly imprisoned for the peaceful exercise of their fundamental rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4 hours.